Welcome to LA Radio Sessions. I'm your host, Mike Stark. LA Radio Sessions, it's where we explore all areas of pop culture, broadcasting, podcasting, and webcasting from the beautiful LA Radio Studio overlooking the LA Harbor at Portsacall Village in Los Angeles, California. All right, welcome to LA Radio Sessions. My name is Mike Stark, and today, something a little different on LA Radio Sessions. You know, we spotlight a lot of new music and a lot of indie artists, but I don't think we've ever had an artist quite like this in this genre of electronic music. And we're going to find out a little bit more about that and the differences between that and other types of music and so on. Delilah Faber.
Yeah.
Is here.
Yeah.
And you're part of the MYA Project.
Yeah.
The reality is you are the MYA Project,
yes.
Right?
I'm a solo girl band.
Yeah. But you do have some help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you introduce?
This is Jim Hudson as a guitarist for MYA Project. And we met here in LA after I moved here from England after 12 years of glorious career in London.
MYA, what is that about? You told me before we went on the air that you're going to expose for the first time anywhere what MYA Project means.
Yeah.
She also said something about everybody can burn in hell.
Yeah.
So MYA stands for many years ago. That's when the project started, many years ago.
Many years ago.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the question I always start every interview with is, let's go back to the beginning. You were born where?
I was born in Germany, but raised in Italy because my parents are, one is German and one Italian, such a great mix.
Right.
And so I consider myself... I have both backgrounds, but mostly I get an Italian temper, so that's what makes me.
Yes, I will.
You'll verify
I'll
that.
I'll back that up. Yes.
And I started very young with the violin because my mom was a fan of opera. That's why I was named after an opera, Samson and Delilah.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Where my name came from. So I've started. Listen to music when my mom was pregnant. So in her uterus, I was going with her to the theater and listen to operas. And at the age of 4, she discovered that I was able to play on a piano a song from a commercial.
Okay.
So I could, play by ear something that was hearing from the TV. And she thought maybe this little girl has a gift.
Right.
So I started first with the piano.
How about your father? Did he play?
My father plays by ear. He plays the accordion.
Okay.
Yeah, he's very good at playing. My mom has just nothing, has nothing to do. She's a music lover, has no talent. So probably between her love for music and my father's talent, then
what happened.
Yes.
Okay, so you're growing up, you're starting to tinkle with the piano at what, 4, you said?
Yes.
So 4, you're playing the piano and mimicking commercials and things like that.
Yeah.
When did you realize that maybe, when did you become conscious that maybe music was the way you wanted to go?
It was a natural choice because I started the conservatory with the violin. I switched to the violin when I was 6. And I'm classically trained. So what happened at the age of 16, 17, I started to listen to different kind of music. There was not any more classical music, the music I started with. And I was fascinated by this electronic music. I grew up with the British electronic pop music. So my first love was a band called Depeche Mode.
Of course.
Pretty popular here in the United States too. And the first record I bought was Violator at the age of 9. And I remember being fascinated by the song Enjoy the Silence, because for the first time I heard something that was not played by real instruments.
Sure.
Not a violin, not a play a piano, not a acoustic instruments, all electronic. So I was like, oh, there is a way we can play music with something different than a violin.
Or an instrument of
or
any
an
kind.
Instrument, yeah, yeah. Any acoustic instrument. So I started considering, you know, I started exploring the science of a synthesizer and electronic music. And
so prior to that, so Depeche Mode was kind of the first introduction to pop music.
Mm-hmm.
You had no pop music hadn't been on your radar at all until like 16?
Yes. I used to listen to the radio.
Of course.
But pop music at the time was Duran Duran, Human League. I also have that's a good thing. I was introduced the rock music by my uncle that used to live with me, and I remember him having vinyls from Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple. So every Sunday morning, I used to wake up, knock at this door in his bedroom. We lived together, and I would listen to this fabulous rock music with him. And he introduced me to the real rock and roll,
right?
The real music.
But it was the electronic music that really got your interest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't believe it that you could play, you can record a track, you can record music without a proper instrument, with a traditional instrument.
Right.
So I first moved to Milan because I wanted to start a school of sound engineering. And the only certified accredited school of sound engineering is the SAE school.
Okay.
And the only branch they have in Italy is in Milan.
Gotcha.
So I first got the sound engineering diploma in Milan for a couple of years. And then I moved to London to get the BA degree, the Bachelor of Arts.
So as a musician, you also found it important to learn how to record and, you know, set up for live things. Now, you performed here in the studio, and my engineer and my producer and I were just like standing here going, we don't have to do anything. You've set everything up. So the sound engineering and that sort of thing has come in handy.
Yeah.
In producing the music you want to produce.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Because if you want to be a music producer or a professional music producer, you have to gain some skills and knowledge of music production, softwares involved,
right.
Microphones, and all the kind of stuff.
Sure.
And, of course, I wanted to open also my career to different paths, like working in the music business.
Sure.
Either as a music producer and a sound engineer.
So from Milan, then to England.
Yes.
And with all of this knowledge now, because you've gone to school for the sound engineering and mm-hmm. so on, and so how did that apply to your trip to England?
Well, I moved to England for two main reasons. One is because the natural consequence of the diploma was the BA, the Bachelor of Arts.
Right.
From the Middlesex University.
Gotcha.
So I got graduated from the Middlesex University as a sound engineer.
Okay.
And music composition, too.
That's in England?
Yes.
Okay. So you got a real degree then?
Yeah. That complete 5 years.
That's what parents would say.
Yeah.
Right? That's what parents would say. You know, this music, that's a nice hobby, but you need to get a real degree. So you got the real degree, too.
Yes.
Awesome.
I did. Meanwhile, I started working as sound engineer and as a studio assistant and live shows. And I started working, you know, on the street. So lifting cases, lifting, you know, all the heavy duty
right.
that you have.
You're a roadie.
Yes. I started with that, like wearing my gloves.
Look at this girl.
Yeah.
She does it all.
Yeah.
I love that.
I remember one time I went back home in Napoli where my family is, and I had scars everywhere because I was on tour with a band and it was like life as a roadie. Sleeping in the grass and, you know, when in a trailer or not sleeping at all, getting a shower every other week. And I went back home and my mom, she couldn't recognize me. It was like, where's my daughter? And that's life, you know, life on the road.
So how did mom feel about all of this?
Well, she kind of began to accept my diversity.
Right. But you were on your own. You were making a living. You were able to not live on the streets. You had a job and you were making money. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think she realized, you know, she started to believe in me when I started to be independent and not asking anything from my family and be, you know, self-sufficient.
So they were pretty supportive, it sounds like.
Yes.
That's great.
Absolutely, yes.
Excellent. So England was that stop. Then where did we move?
Well,
because you've been everywhere. You've been all over the world.
Well, I lived for a while in Jamaica. Not because of pots.
Like, well, why not?
I mean, that's part of the
thing. Is there a better reason?
Is there a problem? Yeah,
I mean, that wasn't the main reason to move there. It was also, you know, again, like for searching like a music influences, like reggae music. There's a, you know, I discovered that dub music, which is a branch of electronic music, is made of, you know, it's a contamination of reggae music with electronic. So I spent a few months in Jamaica trying to, you know, discover the roots of this beautiful music.
Wow.
And
was that the main reason you went to Jamaica?
Yes, I swear.
Then where?
Then L.A.
Then it was the move to L.A.
Yes.
And why, what motivated that move?
Want to know the truth?
Yeah.
The weather.
The weather?
Yes. The thing is...
Well, that's a good reason.
Yes,
but
I know that sounds...
Darling, that's a long way to go for the weather. You know?
You live 12 years in England and then you tell me that if it's not a, you know... A reasonable excuse for moving out from the country.
Well, maybe so. I grew up in Southern California, so this is all that I know.
Imagine not seeing the sun for 12 years.
Okay.
That's pretty much what happened.
So it was the weather. Well, it wasn't the fact that L.A. is the music capital of the world.
Well, of course. Yeah. I wanted to explore this continent because being in Europe is it's way different. I'm still getting used to this new lifestyle.
So musically coming to L.A., what was that experience like? Because I would think that you might be overwhelmed by the musical arena here in L.A. There's so much going on musically, probably compared to what you were used to in England and Italy, or no?
England has a huge scene. You wouldn't believe London is probably more things going on in England because there are so many genres. And L.A. has a huge music scene, but it's pretty much focused on hip-hop, pop music. But what really inspired me and let me move here was my huge inspiration from Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite band. And the thing is, you have an electronic scene here in California, but it's rough and really, it's passionate. It reflects the population. It reflects your country. I mean, the electronic music in England is very... well-mannered and all clean and all clean.
And a bit depressed.
Yeah, like depressed, like Depeche Mode.
Like Depeche Mode, of course. Yeah. All their music is in a minor key. You know that?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. All their songs are in a minor key.
Oh,
they never written anything beside two out of 25 years of career.
Okay, so help me with this. Mm-hmm. The difference between electronic music and techno music. And is there a marriage there?
Yes. Techno music is part of electronic because electronic music includes a lot of micro genres.
Okay. So electronic music is the large umbrella and underneath it comes techno and
house music
and all of that. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Can be world music, can be industrial.
Dubstep.
Dubstep.
Right.
So it's a kind of a generic statement saying, you know, I produce electronic music because it can be everything. I'm not into techno music. I'm not into house music. But still, I am in the, you know,
sure.
my music is included in the electronic.
Right. And there's an electronic music chart, right? And you've been on top of the charts a couple times, right?
Yes, in L.A., yeah. Reverb Nation. Yeah. We're number one on Reverb Nation, which is a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm not a big fan of charts. I'm a big, big fan of people who appreciate music.
That's why we do shows like
For
this.
For real, yeah.
All right, let's go over the songs. Tell me a little bit about Lounge. That is not on the MYA Project EP, which you can get at my myaprojectmusic.com, right?
Yes.
They can order it from you there.
Yes, also on iTunes.
And also at Reverb Nation.
Reverb Nation, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora.
Okay, and this is a four-track EP that's out. It's the only thing you've got out at this point, right?
Yeah, coming soon, the whole album, which is going to include the other tracks that have not been included in the EP.
Okay, and one of those is Lounge.
Yeah.
Tell me about Lounge.
Lounge was written in at Gatwick, the airport in London. I was, waiting.
In the airport.
Yes. I always bring with me.
It's amazing how you can be hit by inspiration anywhere, right?
Yes.
Not only written, it was recorded there.
Really?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
No. That's the you know, the business of having a laptop, Pro Tools, and, you know, all the softwares. You can produce music everywhere.
Wow.
Even, you know.
Well, we got a live version of it for this show, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How do you like that? Anyway, so that was recorded at the airport.
Yeah, I was playing, you know, I was hanging out and waiting for my flight to somewhere. I don't even remember where. But yeah, I was playing with my software and, putting together samples. And then because I was in the lounge room of Gatwick Airport, that's
okay.
why it's got the name Lounge.
So that's the total of the story then.
It's the title, and the mood of the song is like you kind of was chilling out, waiting for something. You know, when you're waiting for a flight, you're going somewhere, so you're waiting for something to happen.
You're anticipating.
Yeah. So that's the mood of the song. Something is gonna happen, but for now, let's chill out. Let's wait. The flight is It's delayed, so there's nothing we can do. Just sitting here and wait for something
to
happen.
And let's make a record.
Yeah.
Okay, the next song we're going to talk about is Glass Word.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, there is a sad story behind the song because I wrote it with my previous guitarist, the latest David Chavez, that unfortunately died of cancer in London at the age of 30. So, and it was a great loss because it was an amazing guitarist, an amazing person, and we were also good friends. And it's such a shame when, someone so talented and so skilled and so gifted just had such a bad destiny. And, of course, I was destroyed by the thing, he didn't manage to record the whole song with me, so I left the song cut in half, like incompleted for a year. Then I decided to get back and work on it recently, a few months ago, because I felt like I owe him something. That was my goodbye. That was my gift to him. Because in a way, I want to pay my tribute to David. So I put together the song, completed the lyrics, and I decided to put it on the record. Because, again, this is a tribute. And the guitar you hear on the song is it's recording in London, and I'm lucky enough to say that my new guitarist Jim is
awe of that track.
Equally the gifted, and his performance of the song is amazing too. And we usually perform the song together, even though we have an acoustic version, just a acoustic guitar and voice. That we usually perform as a duo when we play unplugged, and that's pretty much the story of the song.
So when the song will be released on the album, mm-hmm. it will include the original guitar player. track?
Yes. It's not because it's a tribute. So I want him to be
part
there.
Of it.
Yeah.
How fantastic. And is that the recorded stuff that you played to today, was he included on that track as well?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, Special Dream.
Special Dream. That's another
now, one. Now, here we go. This is another one that involves loss, obviously.
Yes. That's something that, you know, sad experience in your life help you maybe to get inspiration. It's probably one of the common thing that musicians have. We can get inspiration from our suffering or, you know, bad moments.
Sure.
And this song is about another friend that I lost because of drugs. And again, it was a shame because it was a very talented musician that unfortunately couldn't find his answers in, you know, in his life or friends. And we didn't realize that probably he needed help. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I blame us as his friends for not understanding that he was in trouble. And so it was too late when we found out that unfortunately he couldn't be helped anymore.
Mm.
So that's a song about another loss, as you said. And again, I like to think that these people, I keep those people alive. I mean, I keep their memory alive from my music. So in a way, it's my gift, my tribute to people who represented something in my life.
And everybody has loss in their life. And you know, if they listen to either one of these two songs, they might be able to apply it to their own loss.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You don't follow me.
See you later.
See you later. See you later. It's the second instrumental that I perform with my violin. Because even though I switch into I'm mainly a singer now, but I like to keep my violin.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And my music. So, and it was written in Sicily, which is an island in Italy, and it's a beautiful place. Extremely hot and dry in summer. It's pretty much like California. So
right.
I was there with some friends, vacation. Other musician friends, and
sure.
One of them has a studio, a recording studio in Sicily, in the middle of nowhere, so surrounded by, pretty much desert. And we used to hang out in his recording studio because there's nothing else you can do between 10 a.m. and to 4 p.m. because it's so damn hot.
Right.
It's, you just have to hide from the sunshine or either go to the beach and then just, swim. And then.
So did you record it there?
Yes. Everything is recorded with the one. Everything was recorded. Even my vocals on the song were recorded with a teeny tiny microphone connected to my laptop. So it's a really low quality vocal track, but it sounded amazing, so I didn't want to change it. For some reason, with this very cheap microphone, my voice came out amazing, and I kept that track as it is because it sounded like so good.
Well, this song is on the EP, and it's called something else on the EP. You've changed the name. Tell me about this.
This song originally was meant to be called Deep, because the first sound, the intro, was recorded with an analog synthesizer. That's one of my favorites. It's the Moog Voyager.
Okay.
It's the same thing that was used by Pink Floyd for their Dark right. Side of the Moon. So.
And that's an analog product.
Oh, yeah. All analog, old style. So, and as this, you know, deep impact, because
sure.
the intro has this deep sound of, you know, an ethereal sound coming from somewhere.
Right.
And I'm really bad at naming my songs, choosing titles. So every time I open a session on Pro Tools or wherever, I just, you know, I have a song called Cracker. I also go crazy because when I had this the first inspiration, I was eating crackers. So okay, let's call the session crackers. So the song ended up.
Well, you know that's easy if you got it. If it's an instrumental, right? You can name it just about anything. If you got lyrics, it's got to kind of match.
That's why I changed the song, because this song has nothing about, you know, that there was no mention of deep or something. There is nothing.
Right,
in the lyrics,
right.
So I had to.
And only Led Zeppelin can get away with that.
Yeah, that's yeah, like, exactly. Okay, you're an indie artist. Tell me how hard it is nowadays in this environment of downloading and all of that to have a career in music. How can you do it? And what keeps you going and what keeps you wanting to continue when, from a business standpoint, it's ugly out there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm blessed because I also have a side jobs as a musician. I work as sound engineer, freelance engineer, and with my partner Jim, we play for private functions. That what makes us, keep going.
Sure.
And I get paying the rent.
And you're still kind of in the business.
Yeah,
you're still,
exactly. That's
you're
why,
still making music.
Exactly.
You know.
That's why I'm blessed. Most of the people they ended up having side jobs like in an office. I am lucky because I never ever worked in an office. I never wake up in the morning before 10 o'clock. About the being indie artist and the downloading thing, I don't want to blame, like most people do, the downloading thing. It's all about the major labels that killed the music industry. Downloading music is just a consequence because people have been charged way too much money to buy a record for over the last 3 years. So you can't blame a kid that has no money or has no job and he wants to buy a record and he has to spend $30 over a record, which, by the way, that money doesn't end up in the musician pockets. It ends in the pockets of people in the industry. So the musician ends up with a few pennies out of the money you pay for a record. So downloading is not the problem. The problem is all the labels that throughout the years killed the music and the musicians. So without naming any of this, major labels, but they're music criminals. And that's what I believe. And I'm not scared to say that there are people out there, even famous people, who are fighting and trying to educate the people to what's going on in that industry, and they're paying for telling the truth.
I gather from that that you have no interest in being signed to a major label. You're a confirmed indie artist?
Absolutely. And I fight these people, and my next record will be called MK Ultra, which I'll leave you with a hint. What is the meaning of that?
Okay, well, when you come back again, we'll talk about that. Okay.
And it's a message for them, for the people in the street.
You're angry, aren't you?
I am. I am because these people killed musicians. They killed artists. And not in a rhetorical way, they kill. We don't need labels anymore. The good thing, the positive thing about the globalization and the internet and the digital era is that we can distribute the music ourselves. We have all the channels. You can spend a couple of hours a day just promoting your music.
Sure.
Sharing your music with people. We have different tools, SoundCloud, Spotify. You can upload your music as an artist and as your own label.
And what have you found to be the most successful in marketing your music? What are those tools? And all of those tools are valid. Every musician that comes in here talks about the same ones. Which ones do you find the most valuable for you to use to get your music out there?
Definitely the music channels on internet like SoundCloud or any. There are so many music websites like Reverb Nation, like a music page where you create connections. LinkedIn is another one, is a good one because you get connected to other people in the business.
Sure.
Either from as a musician or people in the industry. So
sure.
You get connected. You don't need any more, this passage of the labels. We live in the digital era. That's the positive thing about the digital
right.
era.
But it's a lot of work. And it's something that artists in the past haven't had to deal with, all the marketing and all of that. But it sounds like you've accepted it. You're ready to take it on and keep control of your own music.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a an agent, which is a really we have a really a true personal relationship that takes care of a part of the, right. the you know the promotion, and that's a good choice because of course I'm overloading. I want to focus right. on the music production, and I need somebody to work on that side.
Right, because you can get lost in yeah. the marketing, and yeah. and then. The music could theoretically suffer a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So,
but it's a good deal. I mean, having someone takes care of you as an artist, as a human being, and not like a, right. a moneymaker.
A product.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So what's next on the plate? Are we moving somewhere else now, or we here in L.A. for a while, or – And musically, what's going to happen next?
Oh, yeah. We're going to release the album within probably the next couple of months.
Okay.
Because I'm really – I'm obsessed by, you know, perfection. So it takes time to for me to be satisfied by, you know, a song, a production, a mixing. Because the thing is I am the producer of the whole thing. So I start recording – mix editing, mixing, and mastering all myself in my own studio. So it, I'm the, you know.
You're your biggest critic.
Yes.
Well, Delilah, it has been an absolute joy to have you and Jim both here in the studio.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And performing for us in a way that we my producer and I were blown away by the way you were able to come in here and take charge, set everything up, and play beautiful music, and we normally are running around here like crazy people. We just sat back and watched the magic, and it was really wonderful. So thank you so much for coming in, and when you got new music again, will you come back?
Absolutely, and probably we can come back with the whole band, because one of the projects I have in mind is to set up a band. But since I'm a sociopath, I have troubles with people. I have to find the right people to deal with.
I'm confident you will. I don't find you to be a sociopath at all, but no, maybe there's things I don't – Jim's laughing over here, so maybe there's things I don't know. But I love what you're
doing. That's a nervous laugh.
Yeah, right.
She's going to kill me soon.
I love what you're doing, and I very much appreciate you coming down. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of LA Radio Sessions. We'd love to hear from you about what you think of the show. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page at facebook.com/LA Radio Sessions or visit laradiosessions.com. Stay tuned. More to come.